You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey everybody, this is Lizzie Hale from Hailstorm.
Hey, what's up? This is Chadis from Hell Yeah and Mudvayne.
This is Ron Bumblefoot Fall.
Hey, this is Barbara Wild.
And this is Daniela Clark.
This is Johnny from Art of Dying.
Hey, this is Mixie from Stitched Up Heart.
Hey, this is Nick Reese from Joyous Bowl.
Hey, this is Josh from Bad Flower. Welcome aboard the ship making way. Fuck!
Hey, this is Ralph Sutton.
This is Aaron Jones.
What's going on, gang? Zach Wild here. And you're listening to Making Waves, the Shipwrecked Podcast.
Making Waves.
Welcome to Making Waves. This is episode 61. Thank you for joining us here at the Shipwrecked Podcast. We are part of the Sound Talent Media family, the fastest growing rock podcast in the world. And our community is now larger and stronger than ever. So please, if you guys are a fan, please go ahead and remember to review, rate, subscribe, and share this with your friends. Anyway, tonight is a very special guest joining the show, guitarist extraordinaire, highly prolific. A lot of folks know him from being the guitarist with Rob Zombie, but he has so much more on his plate other than that. Please welcome John Five. John, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me. I brought my Dramamine because I get seasick like you have no idea.
Absolutely.
Just thinking about it. He's got his wristbands on and everything. Yeah, I love it.
We could start, John, by just basically asking the question that you ask in your latest single, which is Que Pasa.
Yes. Que Pasa.
What is going on in the world? We want to get to, obviously, to that song, the video that's directed actually by friends of ours, Mike and Chantel Savage. And you've been working with them for a while. They always have such great stories about working with you. So a really nice little bow tie on this thing, but love to hear about the song, how you chose Dave Mustaine to kind of join in with you. Can you give us the insight on that?
Yeah. What's up? Sure.
Yeah. What's up? What's happening?
See, there you go. My producer, Barry Pointer, we were working together, and this is actually the first song we did for the new record, Sinner. And we were like, oh, you know, this is really good. It's coming together. It's like groovy and all this stuff. And I was like, you know, we had a James Brown sample in there and it's going, Que Pasa, beep, Que Pasa. And he's talking to the crowd or something. We just like to throw in these like vocal hooks and it really stuck. And it was like really great. And the record company was like, well, you obviously can't have that. So, you know, what do you want to, who would you want to have in there? And it's kind of an aggressive part. And I said, oh, it's got to be Dave Mustaine. You know, it's got to be Dave Mustaine. And I did my 6 degrees of separation and, you know, called who I knew. And, you know, I know Dave a little bit, was saying hello and in passing and on tour and things like that. And luckily it worked out amazing. You know, it worked out just great. And he loved the song and he delivered like, I mean, I love telling the story, but he sounded better than James Brown. And it just took him a couple tries and he just nailed it. It was perfect.
Yeah, he's got that snarl that we'd hear on Sweating Bullets or something of that nature.
Oh God, it's so good, you know, and it just was perfect because you can always kind of picture it in your head and it was just perfect, you know, and it just came together great. And then we were ready to shoot the video and Mike Savage and Chantel went out there to Nashville and shot his part and we made a great video. And so people love it. I can't believe it. You know, it's like, I'm so happy and so thankful because, you know, I'm honest with myself. It's a hard sell. It's an instrumental, you know, and but people just really love it and they come to the shows and they're, you know, I just couldn't be happier because I just did this for the love of guitar and love of making music. And when it's something so pure like that and something so honest like that, and it works and people love it, it really means the world, you know?
Yeah, no, you mentioned Sinner. That album is coming out October 29th, just in time for Halloween, which is very fitting and with the kind of the ethos of the John Five name. And you mentioned this is a solo album this year. What are you at, like number 14 on your solo records at this point?
I don't even know. I just keep making music and keep playing and picking. And, you know, I'm just so fortunate and so lucky to be doing what I'm doing. Yeah. Like even with this pandemic and everything like that, you really, you know, think about, wow, you know, so lucky and so fortunate. And I just tried to make lemonade out of lemons, you know, and made a record. And I was tried to stay as creative as possible. And that's what I did. And I worked really hard. Me and Barry worked really, really hard on the record. And we kind of, I rehearsed it so much and I played it so much and I played it all live, you know, like I didn't want to punch in. So I would just take full takes. And that I just, it was like a, I was like a fighter, like training for something or any kind of like any kind of training. And that's what I did because I had so much time on my hands. And I was listening to this station called 40s Junction on Sirius XM. And I'm listening and going, well, I know how studios work. And all these songs on this station were all done live. They're all live. It's just a couple mics in the studio and there's the whole orchestra and the singers. Everything's done live. And I was like, that's how I want to do this record because, you know, I had time. And it's easy just to go, okay, all right, let's punch that in and do this here and blah, blah, blah. But we just did it all as a performance, you know, and it was really wonderful. It was a lot of work, but I'm super happy we did it.
You can take the boy out of Detroit, but you can't take the Detroit out of the boy. That's the Motown shit right there, man. The whole time you were saying that, I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. I just kept thinking about the video game Super Mario Brothers and like the idea of like, if you got to Bowser or whatever it would be. And like, instead of just having to go back at the start of the dungeon, you know, when you're recording your guitar parts, that dungeon level and just going right back to the first level and doing it all over again. And that's just the ethos that you have inside you. That's crazy, man. Cool to hear. Yeah, too.
It's a lot of, it was a lot of work and a lot of fun, but you know, we had so much time, especially being in LA. You couldn't even look out the window, you know. Ah, it's not safe to look out the window, you know. It's like so you know, it's I just had a lot of time on my hands, and instead of going crazy, I just, that's what I did.
So you started writing and recording inside of this pandemic, or were you kind of had your toes in the water before it all happened?
Writing and recording. Yeah.
Yeah. So you got the, you win. Yeah. You got the, you're the boy with the biggest cake.
It's either that or, you know, write and record a record or, you know, stand on the corner and yell at traffic. So
also a great time.
Yeah. John, you mentioned, you know, people are like really digging what you're doing live. When you're playing, what do you usually see as far as who's built into your audience? I mean, obviously you're going to have people who are fans of the work you do with your bands you play in, but just as far as your solo work, do you see a lot of people that you'd probably see at a Satriani or Steve Vai or Eric Johnson gig? Is that kind of your fan build up to for your instrumental shows?
You know, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked that because it's so diverse, just like the music. So it's so cool. And I talk about this on stage. I rarely talk on stage, but when I see a crowd, like when it's an all ages crowd, I'll see like, you know, old pickers, like bluegrass pickers and country guys. And then I'll see zombie fans and I'll see, you know, the shredder guys. And then I'll see little kids, like little kids. And I'm telling you, Justin, it makes me so happy. Like I'll see them like going like this and like having so much fun. They have my mask on or something. And that just does it for me. I'm just so happy with that and so excited. And I mean, if I can inspire, because inspiration, I mean, it's the same thing that happened with me. It inspired me and I'm still doing it. And I think inspiration is one of the most important things you can have. And it's just absolutely wonderful.
One of the things you just mentioned, which struck me funny, is that obviously everyone kind of knows you're somewhat of a kind of massive Kiss fan. And the fact that you said you look out there and you see a kid wearing your mask and just strumming along. And who wasn't doing that when they went to see Kiss for the first time live, right? You're 10, absolutely. 11 years old. You're going, you know, you maybe you painted your face with Ace or whatever, and you're just doing that. So, again, that comes back to the things that you were raised on and what inspired you, now you're doing the same thing to kids. That must be kind of awe-inspiring to see that happening.
It's so important to me, and it makes me so happy to see that. It just is, it's so hard to describe. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, I think that kicks in the face. And when they talk about rock is dead, I'm like, you know what? No, what you just described shows that it's not. It's actually growing again. It's always recycling. But if you go in any guitar center or Sam Ash, you always see some kid sitting on an amp just doodling around or waiting in line for his lessons. It's very inspiring just to know that it's not fading away. These kids aren't just turning the turntables or whatever. They're actually getting in there and they're trying to woodshed.
Yeah, and it's so important too. It's so imperative just for people to keep picking, keep pounding on those drums, keep thumping that bass, you know. It's so important because it's up to you. It's up to, you know, the person watching this, the person listening to this. You know, if it's not going to be you, it's going to be someone else. So why not you?
Yeah. So with you have children, right?
Yes. Yes.
Are they musical or do they?
I think they see how hard I work. I mean, I always have a guitar. Oh, look, I have a guitar with me right now. I always have a guitar with me. And I think they see how hard I work at it. But to me, it's not work, you know, but they're like, no, I'm going to stay away from that. You know, so, no, none of them. They all stayed away from it.
That's crazy. I was just thinking when you're telling the story of seeing the kids in the audience or whatever, and I was just thinking, well, what does his kids think when, like, if they go to shows and like they're seeing this dad, you know, there's dad, and then there's like monster dad, big, massive, bigger than the world dad, you know, like how do you come back to reality as like a family man in that moment? If you don't mind me asking, it kind of blew my mind to really put it in perspective.
Absolutely. They don't really. I wish they were more into it, you know, like my son was like really into Slipknot, and I'm like, oh, well, let me take you to Slipknot. Let me bring you backstage and have you talk to Corey and Jim and Mick and everybody, you know, and then my daughter was like, you know, into Avril Lavigne. I was like, oh, well, let me have you go meet Avril, you know, but they weren't like, you know, if my dad took me to go meet, you know, Ace Frehley back in 1978, I would have done anything for that. But they were like, oh, this is so fun. You know, it's not like crazy for them, you know, but for me, it's just like insane.
Yeah.
Do you think actually, a lot of this?
Actually, you know what?
Me Slipknot?
Actually, you know what? I'm going to go into the other room because my wife is so loud, her voice is so fucking loud. I'm going to go into the other.
I hope this is out of earshot.
Yeah, hold on, sorry. Because they're like yapping in there, all that stuff.
So, John has just walked a quarter mile in his house, so.
Right.
When I think about.
Let me make sure.
Okay. I thought you were going to be like, let's go visit her right now and just sit next to her.
Now, basically every question I have is about everything you have on your walls, but that's for another time.
Oh my God. Well, some of our audience will see, oh my God. Yeah. It's like, it's literally like, it's hard to not pay attention to it, but I have to ask you this question. You started speaking with your kids and are they musical? I heard that you took lessons from Robert Gillespie here in Detroit as a kid.
That's true.
Because he was giving lessons or how did that happen at that time?
Because he was giving lessons. I started with Chuck Miller at Fiddler's on Mack Avenue, and I was 7 years old, and I was these stairs that went up to where they would give lessons. It was this creaky, like, you know, it was the 70s. It was this creaky, like, you know, where you see it in like cartoons where someone like walks and all the stairs come down. It was like that. So I was so young, I couldn't even carry because there was no rail. So I would have to walk like this on my hands and like up the stairs, like a little kid, because I was so little. And my mom would have to carry the guitar case up for me. And, And I was so young, but I just loved it. I never put the guitar down and I just learned everything I could. I went to my lessons. If I could have gone five times a week, I would have, you know, and I never missed a lesson or anything like that. Even when I was sick or anything like that, I just always went.
It's wild.
You know, so obviously your parents enabled your...
Sorry, that's my 1977...
That's the bat phone.
Yeah.
Please tell me it's an avocado green dial, rotary dial with a like extension cord you can take down the street.
Jeez. Whoa. Oh my God, dude, are you serious? Is that... this is crazy.
Can you believe that? Can you see that with the light? Hold on, let me turn this light. This is hilarious.
Justin, that is...
Dude, I grew up in the same period as John, man. I know those fucking phones, dude.
You called the color, dude.
The avocado green, man.
Avocado green, baby.
And that, dude, that cord seriously could go for at least 100 yards.
Oh, yeah. You stretch it. And of course.
Perfectly normal to run it down the hallway from the kitchen into your room where your parents can hear you talk to someone.
Right. Exactly. And it never stopped working.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So
it's literally the same
parents,
one.
And you were going, it's 7 years old. Obviously, you grew up. Did you grow up in a musical household? Your parents had a lot of records and all that other stuff.
I had older sisters and, you know, they did was have vinyl and played their records. And I remember my sisters going to a lot of concerts. And I remember vividly, Jethro Tull, they would go see Vanilla Fudge, Rolling Stones. They would always go to these concerts. And my mom went to see Elvis and Frank Sinatra, because we all had these, they would always buy tour booklets. And but there was always music playing, but no one was really musical. I was the only one that really went crazy with it. Mm-hmm.
It's funny you mentioned this tour programs. They still make tour programs for some shows?
I just thought I loved them so much. And I was like, we're going to make these. And they sell crazy.
Yeah.
They sell like crazy. And I'll sign them and stuff like that. I just thought tour programs were so much fun.
Yeah.
I wish I would have pulled it out. I have one of yours.
They're cool.
They are. Yeah. I always get one from my dad because he has a bunch of them, you know, from when he would take me to shows and whatnot. And that's fine. Yeah. So I always get one too for him. Sorry. That was cool.
It's too bad that they don't make them.
You know? Yeah. I remember the one that really stuck in my mind was the Kiss 76 Destroyer one where the stage is all full of smoke and it's just the logo. It was like the first tour pro. He's got it. Of course he's got it.
You don't just walk into a room like that and not have it.
Yeah, I know, but it's funny.
Okay. So there's different versions of it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's.
Yeah. So they're all a little different. So
the one, really the rock cool. and roll over one, then one that's just the stage is just full of dry ice. And then,
So that one is,
yes.
Let's see that one.
It's the one right there. That one is that's the iconic one. That's just amazing.
Yeah. So pretty cool. You know, but that's the magic of these tour programs,
yeah,
you know, and that's why I do them. And just so people can, and look at how cool this is. I don't know if you remember this, but this is an iron-on that you could put in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
stuff. Look, you live out there. Is Canoga Park really a place?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. I didn't know. I always saw that in the mailing thing. I was like, does that actually exist? Or is it just some PO box and they just give it a cool name?
Yeah, no, it's there. It's there.
Okay. Well, you're wearing a shirt, the band I want to talk about, LA Rats. You guys put out the Johnny Cash song, I've Been Everywhere. Is there more on the horizon for you guys?
Not that I know of, but like, who knows? I mean, who knows if we someone brings something to us, we want to do it. I'm always up for it. I always got a guitar in my hand and ready to do anything. It's funny because I'm wearing this just my cleanest dirty shirt, you know, and but I'm always up for it. I'm up for anything. I just love picking and I love playing. And that only took us a couple weeks to do. You know, we really got through that quick. You know, it's so funny how fast that all came together.
Can I ask you this, switching to a different timeline, you know, a different point in your timeline here? You're 17, you go out to Los Angeles, you have a band, you know, that probably at that period of time, everybody that you're meeting is also in a band. And at some point in time, the obvious happens. We're all very familiar with, like, I mean, for the most part, very familiar with John Five's like public career. You're also writing songs, though. I don't know if it started that young or if it came along later for other artists as co-writers or, you know, yeah, in a producer role. What really brought you into that world?
Well, I think what it was, I can't even remember, but I remember I could always, I think someone asked me if I had any ideas, and I always like could come up with riffs. And I always thought if I could come up with a riff and I could repeat it over and over and over for a very long period of time, and I don't get tired of it, then that's a good riff. It's like, you know, like, I don't know, a good example, like Thunderkiss. You can hear that over and over and over again. That's a great riff. And that's how I kind of look at it. If I can play it over and over and over, then I'll present it to someone. And I always thought that when I was growing up and things like that, I just thought, oh, I like that, you know, and sometimes people dig it, sometimes they don't, but I've had really good luck with writing. And I think the reason I have good luck with writing as well is everybody I write with, I admire so much. I know what kind of songs they like to write, because I know their whole catalog. I know what key they like to write in. I know what kind of arrangements they like. And so when you bring, it's just like if I know you like pizza and I'll say, oh, well, let me make him some kind of a pizza kind of thing. So when you taste it, you'll be like, oh, I really like this, you know, and it's that kind of thing.
It's a psychology 101. I mean, when it really comes down to the idea of what a riff is and presenting it and understanding the ownership of it, and then also being selfless as fuck, because I don't think there's a version of, like, if you Thunderkiss is a perfect example. If you were like, hey, Fifi Dobson, do you want this? Or hey, Rob Halford, or all the other folks that you've ever, you know, written with or for at some period of time, I would guess that you'd be like, fuck, you know, like, but at the same time, like, when you know what Fifi Dobson or Rob or shit, I mean, Katie Lang, things like that, yeah, are looking for, and you're giving them a gift. It's fucking cool, man, to hear you, yeah, say it.
It's cool because, like, the strangest one was Skynyrd, because I walked in there and I had like a big black fur coat on. I had no eyebrows and I had like makeup on. I was a mess, you know, two different colored shoes. And I walked in and they literally started laughing. They thought, you know, someone was pulling a joke on them. And I sat down and I played some Chet Atkins and I played some Roy Clark and some that kind of picking, you know, Merle Travis. And they were like, oh my God. And then I played all of their songs and we got along so great. I mean, they're the best people. And, you know, I ended up writing 6 songs on that record with them. And, you know, you just never know. You never know. And, you know, how you're going to vibe with people. But, you know, it could be great, could be terrible. But I love Lynyrd Skynyrd so much. And I know every guitar lick and every song that they've ever done. And, you know, it's just such a honor to be a part of that history.
Is it, when you walk into a situation like that, where they have this very storied, past as far as the guitar players, you know, past and present. And the same thing with when we did stuff with Daily Roth. I mean, you're kind of dealing with like these kind of like these past sometimes are against you. How do you go into that situation going, okay, I can't top maybe what they did, but I can certainly play at an equal level? Or do you just kind of remove that from your mind and go in there and just act like you've never heard those things before? You've never heard Eddie Van Halen. You've never heard Steve Vai. You never heard Alan Collins and all those guys.
Well, I go into it like going, okay, I know these songs and I can write something just like this. I'm not saying it's better or anything like that, but I can give them something that is in that vein. Like if it's an outtake from Diver Down or Women and Children First, you know, or something like that. And I'll do my best and see if they like it. And I've been very fortunate that they have liked it. And I'm a part of this, you know, my hero's history now, you know, and it's just a weird world. And I'm so thankful and I'm so lucky that what I do and what I've done.
What's that like when you kind of get to that situation where, like, you know, a lot of times we always go through this, you're just like, I cannot believe I'm here doing this. God, I fucking love these people growing up. But you're here, but at what point do you go, hey, it's no longer about me being a fan. You're always going to be a fan. And then now you're friends. But now it's like, this is a professional setting. I'm working in a professional setting. How long does it take to get to that point where you say, I'm a pro now working with these folks? This is no longer about fandom or anything like that.
That never happens. You know, it's always fandom. I'm like, Jesus, you know?
Right.
Like, is Dave telling me to do this or do that? You know, this is rad. You know, it's so cool. You know, that never goes away for me. Okay. And I'm lucky it hasn't, because I think there's something very special about that. And that little kid that comes out, I never get used to it. I never get like anything like that. I'm always very excited. Like Peter playing on my record, you know, he played on Georgia On My Mind. And, you know, I've known Peter for 20 years. And to have him playing on my record, and we left the mics on and he's talking to Barry, our producer, and we left that part in. So you'll hear it on the record. I don't know if they sent you the record yet, but you're hearing him talk a little bit before he starts playing. We kept that on. But like, it never goes away. And I'm so happy it never has gone away.
Well, that's incredibly refreshing to hear from you, considering all that you've done and all you've been involved in. So it's always nice to hear that. Like, there are those people still out there that do take this. And we always want it to be, as a fan, we always want it to be a wonderland. We always want it to be fantastical and go, God, are they stoked when they're up there? Are they happy playing? Because sometimes they go through the motions. We all know what the reality is, some of it for some people, but to hear you taking this take of like, I'm just stoked to be up here every time doing this stuff. It's really refreshing to hear. So thank you as a fan.
Yes. And I'm very happy to be up there all the time, every night. I'm so thankful. And I even tell Rob, I'm like, look at us, look at what we're doing. Like, this is insane. You know, this is awesome. These are the golden years. And I would always tell Rob before we walked out on stage, and this was before COVID, I was like, look at how lucky we are, you know?
My question that I was going to mention before we started, I guess this now is the right time if I'm going to ask it ever, is you have a lot of accolades, man. In those moments, I can't even put myself in those shoes. And one in particular that I have to ask how it felt to be in those shoes is Salt and Pepper.
Yeah.
I read that you did multiple shows live with them.
Well, here's what I did, which is it's the only time I really get nervous, and it's live TV. So the Jay Leno show called me. I knew the musical director, and I haven't done much at all. Actually, at this time, I was a session guy, but they knew that I was the session guy, and they called and they said, hey, we need a guitar player for Salt and Pepper, and they're going to do a medley of stuff like that. And I go, okay, you know, I'll do it. And God, there's everything is on YouTube. You could imagine everything except for that.
Of course.
And I'm wearing a Del Taco like work shirt. It's my buddy, because he worked at Del Taco, and I put that on. I put some Dickie shorts on, some long hair, and I'm playing What a Man, all that stuff. I'm playing all these songs, just going crazy, scratching on the guitar, everything. I'm just going nuts. And it was so awesome. But if you guys ever see that video, you'll be like, you'll be holding your stomach laughing, because I'm literally going crazy. And I'm like, it's really funny.
Oh, I'm going Reddit, here I come after this.
I know. Jay Leno show. Yeah.
Yeah. I read that and I'm like, oh my God, that's like, for me, just I can't, like, from all of the things that you've done and then you take and sidestep into that moment, especially because it's on TV, I can't, right. Like, it just stands out. Like, I had to ask, man. That was, that's even cooler to know that you're a fan of Del Taco, too. It's an exceptional establishment.
Yeah, I would love to see that again. I really, really would love to see that again.
If I ever miss it, I'll send it your guys' way.
There you go. Hey, real quick, guys, I'm going to go to commercial break here, and we'll be starting up the live stream here pretty shortly. So let me just do this. So, hey, folks, at this time, we want to remind you that not only are you listening to the Kick-Ass podcast right now, but we also produce an amazing rock music-themed cruise vacation called Shiprocked. We'll be sailing this January 2022 to Costa Maya, Cozumel on our 12th voyage. Make sure and join us into metal oblivion as we sail with the Lamb of God, I Prevail, Steel Panther, Ashes to New, and many, many, many more. Cabins are still available and on sale at shiprock.com. Get yours before they do sell out. And with that said, welcome everyone from Facebook Live. Thank you for joining us for our conversation here with John Five. So we're going to get back in the middle of it. Remember, guys, this drops on the following Monday coming up here. Make sure and check out the entire episode as John goes over his solo career and things he's got going on and basically how he got to where he is in his career. So with that said, we'll let Chad and John get back to it.
Well, we were just discussing Salt and Peppa, and I'd like to go through the mirage of all their awesome random things that I've learned about you this week while digging in a little deeper. However, if I can just focus for a moment on what's currently happening, you have a record that's coming out, or is pre-order right now, and it's coming out about a month from now. And this is what, your 9th or 10th solo record?
I don't know.
I would expect you not to, because when I was looking at the timeline, I was trying to put together like, okay, so 17 here and all this stuff. One of the things I was going to ask you is like, here you are doing your 9th solo record, but in between the other 8 or 9 was like, so many pieces of recorded music. I don't think I know. I don't think, and on this show, I don't think we've ever had a guest that's ever been involved in that many compositions and recordings. How do you find the fucking time?
I to be honest, I wake up at 7 o'clock in the morning and I go to bed probably at like, I don't know, probably 2. And in that whole time, I'm just always working and I love it. I'm just so fortunate and so happy to be doing what I'm doing. And I've never worked a day in my life. I don't see it as work. I just see it as enjoyment. And I really think, I know it sounds corny, but I really think it's the meaning of life is to do what you love, because you'll, you know, have such a happy life. And it's just been so proven to me that way.
You mentioned you're working constantly. Are you just, a lot of it is obviously people reach out to you and you are working on a project that you've kind of decided to work on, or does a lot of your work stem from the fact that like, I'm just going to work on riffs, and if I find one that I come across, go, you know what, I know who they'd be perfect for. Do you just at that point just contact them and say, hey, I was up at 3 o'clock this morning and working on this riff?
I usually, you know, it's if someone, you know, gets a hold of me, like if Six gets a hold of me or something like that and says, hey, let's write something for this or that, you know, then I'll work on something like that. So it just depends. Like if someone calls and says, hey, let's work on something, and or Dave or Rod Stewart or something, and then I'll just play something like that. And sometimes it comes easy, sometimes it doesn't, but it's fun.
It's like a chameleon. I just thought about this. It's like in that phone ringing earlier too, it's just like, that's your bat call, man. I can't, like, I was going to say, well, what about the movies? What about these scores that you're doing? Like the speed too? They're like, oh, what's it? Is somebody just like reading the top line and like, all right, go. And then you're just like, I guess this sounds real fast. Like, how does that work out in motion picture music, man?
It's, you know, you just concentrate and really hone in on stuff. When I'm recording or playing or something like that, I don't hear anything else. I don't hear anything else. Like if I'm playing my instrumental shows and it's like so crazy, it's not, there's no improv or anything. I'm remembering all these notes that are in an hour, 20 minutes. And to remember all that stuff, I'm just so focused. And sometimes, you know, people are pounding on my feet, trying to get my attention or something like that. But it's rarely I will break that conversation, concentration. I'll just be so focused. And that's what I've done, like, even with recording, too. And it's kind of like you can really learn how to do that. And there's an art to it. If you really focus on something, you can block everything out. It's pretty incredible. It's a cool thing to develop.
When you get a request like you mentioned Rod Stewart and say, hey, I'm trying to work on something, can you figure something out for me? Do you revert back to what he's doing now, or do you kind of go, I think I can write something in the vein of Every Picture Tells a Story, that era? Do you kind of look at that, or are you just kind of go, what do you need? I'll come up with it.
They usually, you know, like artists will usually say, give me something like this or like that. And I'll know exactly what they're talking about. And I'll know because they're at home and they're singing this or feeling this. And I'll go, okay, well, I'm going to write in that same key, in that same tempo. Because in their head, they have it. They can hear it in their head. And if something is catchy enough or hooky enough, they'll know it and they'll hum it to themselves. And they'll go, yeah, this is exactly what I'm looking for. And I think that's why I've had such good luck, because I'm not like, I'm never, ever like, look at me, ever. I'm there for that artist. I'm not there to say, oh, look what I can do. I'm there to go, what do you think of this? Do you like this? So I think that's why I've had really good luck with writing with people, because I just listen to what they say.
So when you're driving home from those sessions or whatever it may or may not be, and now it's you, right? I'm picturing you alone in your car, and you just are taking in that 4 hour, 5 hour write or whatever it was. And it is just you time, and you can reflect. Are you thinking about the next footing that you need to have? Or are you thinking about the footing you just came from and kind of processing what you went through?
I'm always thinking of what's coming next. Even when, it's so funny you say that, because even when I was at my friend's house and I'd be sleeping over, I would be like, what are we going to do tomorrow? You know, I was always thinking of the next thing. And whenever I was coming home from a tour, I'd be like, well, what's the next thing? Even if it was a month later or 2 months later, at least I knew that was coming. And that's how I've always been. So yeah, I don't think anyone's ever asked me that. And it's such a great question, because that's a state of mind where a lot of people are like, that was a lot of work. You know, I'm going to sit back and I'm going to put my feet up and watch my stories, you know, but I've always been that person that said, wow, that was a lot of work. I'm going to put my feet up and watch my stories, but let's see what's next on the calendar as well. And that will comfort me even more.
Yeah. I mean, that's a cool place to be when one foot's somewhere and the other foot's mm-hmm. moving forward. Like you're walking, You're literally in the motion.
Absolutely.
Very cool.
Hey, John, when you first started playing, was there any guitarists that you wanted to emulate that kind of got you on into all this? And then at what point did you kind of switch over and start learning the art of picking and all these other things that kind of now make up, well, definitely some part of your style?
I've always had epiphanies growing up. First, it was, you know, Roy Clark and Hee Haw. Then it was Jimi Hendrix. And then it was Kiss. And then it was Van Halen. And it was Yngwie. And it was like, and it just always went like this. But I think the one person I always wanted to be that I thought had the, you know, was Dave, you know, like, I want to play with Dave. I want to be Eddie Van Halen. I want to be married to Valerie Bertinelli. You know, I wanted to do all that stuff. When I was young, I was like, man, I wish I was Eddie Van Halen, you know, and I was 10 years old and listening to Women and Children First and, you know, all that stuff. My first album was the debut. It was Van Halen 1. I was 8 years old and I was obsessed, you know.
It's funny you mention Eddie, because I think from what you probably knew him, but for most of us or fans that kind of follow his career, he kind of had the same with you, always walking around with a guitar in his hand, always wanting to work, just a work guy, wanted to put the songs in play. So it's very understandable that you'd want to emulate someone who not only was this incredible player and flashy, but also constantly working with others, writing for others, coming up with new ideas and just exploring. So that makes a lot of sense for you.
I think it's like kind of a comfort level as well. You know, you feel most comfortable with this thing that you've held in your arms since you were a child. It's kind of like a whoopee that you're allowed to walk around with and look cool.
Your Linus blanket.
But yeah,
but exactly. Super cool.
Yeah. But like, you know, it's like, oh, wow. Like, it's like, you can't like, you know, hold your blanket and stuff like that and walk around. They'll put you away, you know, but you can have this thing that you've had as a child, you know, as a child that you loved. It's like, and you can still have it today. And that's all right.
Yeah. Hey, we had a question from one of the, I'd like to ask a question. This is an interesting question. This is from Karen, John. She wants to know, if you could have a custom robot built, what job would you have it do?
Oh, I would definitely have it clean the cat litter. It's the worst job ever. I have 4 asshole cats that love to pee and poo as much as possible. And I always clean this litter and it's just a nightmare. So if I had a robot, that's what I would definitely have it do.
All Sphinx cats do all 4 of them?
Yep. And they all, for some reason, they all sleep on me. I don't know what it is. They stay away from my wife and they're really hot. I mean, they're like over 100 degrees and there's no hair. So, and they're heavy. So they're all like down, like one sleeps on my head and it just goes all the way down to my feet and I can't move. And it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. And every time I go to sleep and I'm like, I got to get sleep. And I'll lock them out. And there's this one cat, Telly, I named it after Telecaster, will scratch at the door. And I don't know if something's wrong with Telly, but the cat won't stop. It won't stop. It'll be like 4 in the morning. I'll be like, oh my God, this cat has been doing this for hours. It's very strange. So, 4 Sphinx cats.
Now I wonder why you're getting up at 5 or 8 or whatever, going to bed to you.
To feed the cats. Well, they're just trying to work you over to you. They're working you over till you get out of the bed so they can take your spot. There you go. They just want your spot. You're in their spot.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. So one thing I want to ask you is, like, obviously very technical player. You certainly have fun while you're playing, but live, I just like to, like, the things you do with Rob, you guys are a very active band on stage. It's a very athletic performance. How tough is that? How tough is it to maintain your composure as a player yet be very entertaining at the same time while wearing all kinds of different costumes?
It's, you know, it's a dream come true for me because I love being in a theatrical band, and it's so much fun, like going, oh wow, here comes this huge robot, or here comes these, you know, huge explosions or big production, because that's what I loved growing up. And it was like, wow, this is so cool. This is so fun. And, you know, it's just, it's like heaven, you know, like to be around all this stuff and to see it. And because watching it from the stage is so different from watching it, you know, from the crowd, because when you're watching it from the crowd, like, a lot of my friends will come to the show and I'll put them on the side of the stage. And on the side of the stage, you can't really see anything, and it sounds like crap, but it's special for them to be on the side of the stage, you know? So I'm like, okay, but I really wish they would watch from the front of house, you know, where they could see everything. And my sister, just the last show we played, went and watched from the front of house. And she was like, oh my God, it was like I've never seen the show before. It was like, there's so many things that I had no idea was going on. So yeah, I love doing that stuff.
It's interesting, that side of the stage thing, right? You're like, really? You're kind of like, all right. Like, yeah. You're not even getting the, okay, cool. Well, whatever.
Right.
Big gulps, eh? See you out there. You
know? Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Hey, Chad, do you want to go ahead and ask? We don't have to right now, but if you want to ask a walk the plank, or would you rather for John? John, this is a thing where we do walk the plank. We just ask you just a couple of questions, and it usually doesn't really tie into music so much, but we just like to hear your honest, organic answer to the question.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'll start. My question to you is, I can't imagine what the answer is going to be, but when you're down, what is it that you tend to turn to find an emotional pick me up?
I love to, obviously, number one, play guitar. It just makes me happy. It makes me, and I love to learn things. It really occupies my mind to really learn something difficult and try to, you know, work on it as much as I can. When I play guitar so much, I love to collect. I collect old Kiss merchandise, and it's, you know, it's very therapeutic. And I've, you know, something like that you can get, it makes you happy. It's the thrill of the hunt. And it's therapeutic, and that's why people collect coins or thimbles or teacups or anything like that, because there's certain people have a collective soul, and it is, you know, a therapeutic hobby. It really is. And it's exciting. And I don't, you know, I think that people having a hobby, if they collect stamps or anything like that, anything at all, it's good to have, because it's good for your mental health.
Yeah.
I want to ask you something
real quick. It's interesting that the moments, the items that you mentioned were things that my grandfather, like, and grandmother both collected: stamps, coins, and thimbles. And I had not thought about that collection process in those ways until just right now. That's all I wanted to say about that.
And you know, think about your, obviously, I don't know your grandparents, but think about what they went through when they were growing up. It was probably very difficult compared to what it is today. It was probably very, very difficult. And if they found like stamps or coins or things like that, it gave them a sense of joy. And, you know, that's why people collect things. It is, and that's why eBay exists. Yeah. eBay exists just because of things like that, for nostalgia, you know?
Made me smile.
Yeah, nostalgia definitely helps the soul for sure. Like, you think, we obviously, sometimes people collect things, maybe Kiss for you is, sometimes it helps because those are wonderful parts of your life you just want to reconnect with. Sometimes we forget about those things in such a fast modern world that we used to tie ourselves to. One of the things I want to ask you about your collection real quick, is there anything you have that Gene doesn't have and he wants from you?
Tons, yeah.
Really? Do you ever barter with him?
No, I'd never sell anything, you know?
Oh, I'd just say trade for trade. I'll take the 78 pinball machine for that doll.
Yeah, I have, it's funny, I'll show you really quick. I have his, let's see if you can see this, his outfit from 1974.
Wow, that looks like the Mike Douglas wings.
That is, those are the Mike Douglas wings.
Holy gosh, man.
That's amazing. What he wore on Mike Douglas, yeah.
Oh my God, yeah.
Mike Douglas, yeah.
And he doesn't have those. There's only one?
There's only one. That's when they first started. It was his very, 1974.
Man, oh man.
Yeah, does he want it?
Just send some people over.
Yeah, I know, right?
I just got that moment. Just that back pocket.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I feel like, to be honest, it's a funny question, but I don't know. It's weird when it's your own stuff and it means something, but it's not as important. That, like, I'll give stuff to my friends that they're so thankful for, and they're so happy about, but it's just like an old outfit that's smelling up my closet, but they're so excited when they get it, and that makes me happy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Hey, Justin wanted to ask, he's one of our viewers here. He wants to know this. Is those theatrics that are the theatrics you involve yourself in, do they help inspire and bring life to your solo shows?
I love the theatrics, especially with my shows, because my shows are smaller, but I had this idea of, everybody has amps and stacks of amps and things like that. So I thought, well, why not put television, TVs, because now we can have TVs that you can turn and the screen, it's like a computer screen. Mm-hmm. So I put amp, like the cabinet, I put the TV inside the cabinet. So it looks like they're cabinets, but they're really TVs. And like things like that are inventive and cool to see in a smaller venue, and like big huge heads and things like that, and that people can put on and dance around. So I love doing that thing, because you're not expecting weird things like that while I'm playing banjo. It's just like a weird acid trip,
Yeah.
That's right. And people love it. Just like you laughing like that. And when that happens, you're like, wow, this is a lot of fun. And if I can make people have fun during the show, that's the best for me.
It reminds me when Getty would put up the rotisserie chicken things behind his, that instead of his cabinets, he's got those, or he's got the coin operated like washer and dryer up there.
So right.
It's just like fits to the band, right? It fits your sense of humor and everything like that. My question to you is this, and this is a real simple one, and it's one that I think, it befuddles a lot of people. Alive one or alive two?
Man, that's tough, dude. That's really,
it's hard, because the output on the live one is great, but that gatefold on live two is what basically sent us all to the moon and back.
And I love the studio side too of a live two. Man, that is tough. I'm gonna say probably a live one, because it just broke the band. It was such a massive thing. It just opened up the floodgates, But a live two is so great, man.
Yeah, that live though is so raw, and that's when they were kind of dangerous band back then. Yeah. Amazing.
Wonderful.
Amazing. Well, I'm glad you were a little torn on that. It gave me a little bit of pleasure in watching that happen.
Absolutely.
Masochist.
Well, listen, John, we've had you for about an hour, bud, and it's been a lot of fun. And
thank you.
Thank you enough for your time. Obviously, the new album, guys, Sinner, is the new solo album coming out right before Halloween. So you guys can cue that up when the kids are trick-or-treating. So that's October 29th. You can check out the new single and video for K-Pasta that's out right now, featuring Mr. Dave Mustaine of Megadeth. Obviously, you guys going on the road? You're going to be doing some solo stuff? You're still going out with Rob? What do you guys got going on?
Yeah, we're going to be doing a festival in November with Metallica, with Zombie in November. And then I think we're going to Belize to do a show. And we got a bunch of stuff coming up. So I'm very, very happy.
How about you? A solo trek coming out, or are you waiting for 2022 on that?
Yeah, no, a lot of solo shows, a lot of things going on. So you can just always, you know, check it out on Instagram or the website or anything like that. I'm very active on the Instagram, so it's a lot of fun.
Speaking of, guys, remember, check out John 5 official Instagram, and also check out his other Instagram page, Knights and Satan Service, which is kind of a homage to all things Kiss and his collections. A lot of fun, a lot of good people, and they're doing some interesting, fun things. Anyway, John 5, thank you everyone who's watching us tonight. We really do appreciate it. And again, guys, you're watching Making Waves, a Ship Hop podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media family. We could not do this show without a few folks, and that includes our show producer, Al McManus, our engineer, Jennifer Zito, our show coordinator, Heather Smith, and of course, the captain, Al Koenig, and a co-host here, Chad. Thanks, Chad. Yeah,
thanks for having me. But
John, thank you. Best to you and your family. And again, thanks for this. Is a great, a lot of fun. Remember, guys, check this out on Monday. Watch the whole thing on YouTube, where you can find it on Spotify and iTunes, and hear everything that John had to say.
Thank you.
All right.
Have thanks. A good night, man. Thanks for
Peace,
being
John.
Here,
John. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, guys. Bye, bye. Bye.
Hey you, do you have any plans this year? How's that going? Did you get 2020'd? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020'd, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020'd.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-D.com, SoundTalentMedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.